I don't mind two wheels either. So have you got any bikes in the collection? You mentioned bikes.
I've got an old, not old, I suppose a 93 model BMW R80. So old boxer engine, so no radiator.
Yeah.
It's like a massive postie bike, I suppose, like a postie bike on steroids. So I got one of those. Had an earlier one, and they made that sort of engine style and the way the bike's configured from the late 60s to 96. So I sort of figured get as close as 96 as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Found one with, I don't know, had about 80,000 kilometres on it, and picked it up from Queensland in 2007 and resprayed it, and it's good. I love it. It doesn't. It always starts, doesn't break. It's a good thing. Good thing to have around. What I did.
Welcome to Convos, Stories That Connect, the Lifestyle Barrington Coast podcast where we dive into the heart of what makes this region so special. Through candid and inspiring conversations, we explore what draws people to this breathtaking part of the Mid-North Coast and what keeps them coming back. Our guests share their personal journeys, challenges and passions, offering a glimpse into the vibrant lifestyles that shape the Barrington Coast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us again on Convos, the stories that connect us all together. So as you know, we're big on guests on this show, and we've had a number of different people on, but we've taken it up a notch, I reckon, today, because our guest is none other than the boss of the Mid-Coast Council, Adrian Pinuccio, who is the general manager there. And we're going to have a bit of a chat. We're going to get to know Adrian a little bit. Of course, we'll talk about some local issues. But Adrian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, g'day.
Mate, so how long have you been in the general manager's role now?
The role at Mid-Coast Council? Mid-Coast. Since 2018.
Okay, so it's been a little while now. And how are you kind of finding the role? How did you settle in?
It's fantastic. The thing that I tell you, so I was from North Sydney. I worked at North Sydney Council for quite a few years before the Mid-Coast. What they don't tell you is, in a metropolitan Sydney space, local government isn't such an issue. So people aren't that interested in what's happening locally. You know, roads are generally okay. Bins are always cleared out. There's a waste collection that happens, you know, curbside pickup. There's not much of a chatter.
Yeah.
When you move to regional, it's a bit different. So people are interested what's happening locally, and there is more of a conversation to be had. So that's sort of the largest change. But as far as settling in, I like having conversations with the community and understanding what needs and wants are and how the council can respond.
Yeah, terrific. And so were you actively looking for a move to like a regional area, and so then looked for, you know, a job that fitted your skills in this area, or were you looking for a specific job and it happened to be that the Mid-Coast Council one was available? How did you... Tell us how you got
there. Yeah, I was looking for a specific job. So my career path, the trajectory wasn't leading me to be general manager at all. So I was a practicing lawyer or solicitor, did my legal training and practiced for quite a few years, specialised in environmental, administrative law and local government. That's the type of niche, which was quite good. Worked in a large practice in Sydney, very respected law firm, and you know, did that for quite a few years, and I thought, oh, a couple of in-house council roles came up, and we represented a few councils at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Job at North Sydney came up. Thought I'll put my hat in the ring. This was back in 2001.
Okay.
Council's being council.
Yeah.
Took them about 2 or 3 months to make a decision.
Yeah.
People on leave and the like. And that's how it started. So working at North Sydney, they had a legal budget just on planning and development matters. So matters before the Land and Environment Court, about $2 million a year, which is quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty much running or managing about 25 legal matters at one time. So my goal was to bring that down to $1 million. I thought that's manageable. And I was in-house legal there from 01 to 2013 or 2012. And it was $1 million pretty much every year from there on in, which is manageable and it's reasonable.
Good job. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat. So what happened from there was I thought, oh, working as this is great, providing advice is great, but, you know, running appeals of whether a carport in, you know, should be approved or not, probably lose a bit of motivation with stuff like that. Not everyone's going to be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So litigation, you never really win. You never really lose.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those matters, you end up negotiating an outcome,
mm-hmm.
which is good result for the council. but no one's really giving you high fives afterwards. But you've worked your butt off during the process.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'll try a bit of a change. So I did an MBA. I can't remember when I started it, but I probably finished around 2013. Started asking to do some acting general manager roles because I initially started just in planning development, but over time my role broadened as general counsel. So I was doing legals for the entire council. So I was sort of part of the executive, but probably not formally, but I was. So did my MBA, asked for a whole heap of acting general manager roles, and it initially just started where, you know, between Christmas and New Year's, no one else wants to work. Yeah, I'll do it. Because at that time I was living about 2Ks from work, so quite easy for me to just duck in and do a couple of hours or the day's work during that time of year. And it just kept on broadening out. So a chief operating officer's role came in and I put my hand up for that, got it, picked up legal, my strength, procurement, governance, insurance, workers' compensation, generally things that could go wrong. They created a role for someone, but I'll put my hand up for that. If I didn't take it, I'd be reporting to someone else, which I wasn't inclined, didn't really want to do. So I got that, and then I got a whole heap of acting general manager's role from there. So, you know, cast your mind back to, what was it called? It was Fit for the Future. So there was a scheme where councils were meant to amalgamate, merge.
Yeah, that's right.
Midcoast being one of them.
Mm.
North Sydney was slated to merge with Willoughby and Mossman with North Sydney. And I was given delegation to do everything possible to prevent a merger.
Right.
Which was exciting, putting my legal hat on, because we ran legal proceedings, we won against the state, which was cool. Mm. And then, so we won that, but that took a few years. Mm-hmm. So that council's not merged. After that, I did put my hat in the ring to be the permanent general manager. I was acting general manager for quite some time.
Yeah.
Didn't work out the way I wanted it to work out. I thought, you know what, I enjoyed working at that council. There was 350 staff there at the time. I pretty much knew them all because I'd been there long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a taste for it. So I thought, well, you know what, I'm okay at this. I'm going to step up.
Yeah.
So job at Midcoast Council came up literally about a month after. So put my hand up, got it, and love it.
Yeah, and so here you are, living on the beautiful mid-north coast. So then I guess having spent a little bit of time here now, what do you love about the coast itself?
Oh, I suppose it's, what is it, the serenity?
How's the serenity?
I know, it's red hot. It's so good. So outside of work, it feels like you've retired sometimes, which I do enjoy. I like the peace and quiet. Work's work. So everyone, you get paid on a Thursday, but you have to do a good week's work to get paid.
Yep.
But outside of work, I enjoy the serenity. I like the quiet, you know, like my neighbours. They're awesome, but
yeah,
the peace, quiet, tranquility. People say hello. That's the thing. People say hello here.
It's funny, we were talking about that. Who was I talking about that with? I can't remember. And we were talking about, you know, from a marketing perspective, obviously that's my background. And we were talking about that could even be like the tagline for the Mid-North Coast is, we say hello to each other here.
It's like, g'day mate. And that's it. That's all you have to say. I mean, I remember my last place at North Sydney, you know, it was a freestanding, single-fronted heritage cottage. So the house is 4.5 metres wide.
Yeah.
The block's 5.5 metres wide. You could do like it's going to sound great. I've done a whole garden renovation, but you've done it in the morning.
Yeah, right.
Because it's just your front yard.
Yeah.
But it'd be in the front yard, just watering the plants, and you'll say hello. I'll say hello to everyone. And then the first few times, people just going to turn back and don't know who you are, mate, and keep on walking. Then after about a week or two, they'll say g'day.
Yeah.
Just say hello. But from day one here, people will generally say hello and happy to have a conversation.
Yeah. So, it's about the lifestyle really, isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
And you and I were chatting off air, and you clearly have a massive passion for the job that you're doing. And it was terrific to hear you talk about that and say, I don't find it hard work, you know, because you love it. But it is a big job. And so when you're not at work, what do you do to take it easy? Like, how do you kind of decompress and
take enjoy yourself? Take a step back before you say to everyone that I don't think my job's hard. Managing expectations is the difficulty. It is quite a challenge. But yeah, I do enjoy the work and I enjoy planning, and that's a lot part of the job.
Mm.
Outside of work, I have some hobbies. Like I do like playing tennis at, you know, the Foster Tennis Club on a Tuesday night. Don't do it as well as I would like to. Play as much golf as I can, which is cool. Just finished the pennant season. I represent Foster Tuncurry, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
I like restoring, which means like old things. So it could be old cars, I'll motorbikes, I'll push bikes. I know my capacity or capability, so I'm good at pulling things apart, really good at that. I could paint, spray paint, I could fix body and stuff, but I'll get to a point where I put it all back together and I thought, oh, I'm stuck now, and then hand it over and then it gets finished off. So, yeah, I do enjoy things like that.
Yeah, right. I read that you had a 1977 Statesman.
I had a 1977 Statesman. We had that in the family since new. And it was, and an uncle's car. It was awesome. It was like driving a massive living room around the Shire, like pretty tradie V8, cool car. When we first moved up, I was living on Burgess Road and I didn't have a space in the garage for it. So I kept on corroding on the driver's side because I had to park the car outside. So I ended up moving that.
Yeah.
And then I bought an old Mercedes convertible, which I'm scratching around on.
Yeah.
I like to play.
And the old cars, especially the old V8s, are fun. My first car was a 76 Kingswood.
There you go.
V8. My mum was mortified.
Yeah.
My dad pretended to be mortified. He was secretly stoked.
He'd have been proud as punch.
He was.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, they were good fun. But I don't mind two wheels either. So have you got any bikes in the collection? You mentioned bikes.
I've got an old, not old, I suppose a 93 model BMW R80. So old boxer engine, so no radiator.
Yeah.
It's like a massive postie bike, I suppose, like a postie bike on steroids. So I got one of those. Had an earlier one, and they made that sort of engine style and the way the bike's configured from the late 60s to 96. So I sort of figured get as close as 96 as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Found one with, I don't know, had about 80,000 kilometres on it and picked it up from Queensland in 2007 and resprayed it, and it's good. I love it. It always starts, doesn't break. It's a good thing to have around. What I did find, though, if I leave it like in the car park, like outside anywhere or in the shopping centre, like at some stage your kid will be on the bike. The parent will put the kid on. So my petrol tank is a little bit scratched up. Not me, the children of the Mid-Coast.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's hard to resist, isn't it?
Oh, it doesn't bother me. Like I don't mind repainting anyway, so I'll get to that at some stage.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of work type business. So our region, it's beautiful. We know that. We love it. Apparently, our region is going to become a bit of a destination.
We've got the ecotourism award.
We've recently been awarded ecotourism status, which is fabulous.
Yeah, so as far as the ecotourism awards, that was a big investment in time from the council, but really the tourism industry itself. So the council guided through the industry to get the accreditation, and we're one of the few regions in the country to achieve that. So it does mean that people after those ecotourism destinations, it is a place to go to, and they'll jump on that.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a win, I guess, for some of our local tourism operators,
100%.
Is the fact that we can kind of promote ourselves as that ecotourism destination. We love balance here, though, and, you know, you mentioned at the top of our chat that one of the things you love about love about being here is the serenity.
Yeah.
How do we get that balance right between attracting tourism to help our operators to grow our local economy without losing what we love about the area, which is that bit of peace and quiet sometimes?
The way to think of it is it's only a couple of months a year when it blows out of, like, I'd ever think it blows out of proportion. I think busy is good as far as tourism and people spending the money. It's not, you know, December 20 isn't it time to go buy canned food from the shop. They're not going to run out. They're not going to run out of toilet paper. It's good. It's a vibrant space. And that's really, it's a different dynamic that we do have in our sort of major centres.
Yeah.
So I think we do have the right balance because most times of the year it is quiet and it is serene. And, you know, like I take the dog out for a walk at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
Any time of year it's going to be quiet. Take dog to the beach at that time of day. So any day of the year is going to still be quiet.
Yeah.
So sort of, I suppose, managing around that. January is going to be busy. Around Easter is going to be busy, but sort of embrace it for what it's worth. Like the businesses need it. So
100%.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Like I guess I'm a blow-in as well. We moved here in 2021.
Yep.
We were part of the great COVID migration.
Yeah.
Got out of the lower Blue Mountains and moved ourselves and our little business up here. And so I have to say, you know, the height of tourist season, I love it. I love the buzz. I love having people around. The restaurants are full, the cafes are full. Right. There's a bit of a vibe around town. And I know, you know, when it's the middle of tourist season, maybe you can't get a car park right in the middle of town. But everything's so close.
It's not that far away,
it's
though.
It's not that far away.
You can't get a park in the middle of town, but you could park 100 metres away.
Exactly right. And you can walk. And we have to remember, that's the reason we've got some of the really nice restaurants and the really nice cafes we've got, is because that tourist season, you know, it kind of bolsters them and it allows them to build and to have the confidence to invest in those sorts of businesses. And we get to enjoy them, like you said, like 9-10 months of the year.
Exactly.
All to ourselves.
So, exactly right.
Yeah. So tourism, definitely important for our region. So what's on council's agenda, I guess, moving forward in order to kind of help support that?
Yeah. Traditionally, tourism in the Midcoast, we've got our sort of destination management plan was initially focused upon getting people to the Midcoast. Originally, that was really a lot. There's a ton of free experiences, which is great, in the Midcoast local government area. And the Barrington Coast is our tourism brand.
Yeah.
Our second iteration of our, our destination management plan is to get some visitor spend and track visitor spend, which is increasing. So that's sort of the next iteration of what we headed to, because the numbers are always good.
Yeah.
I've got mates that when they come up and visit, they'll say, well, I haven't been here since I was five. And then they come and go, oh, man, this is... it's ridiculous. And then they'll come back again, you know, which is good. And you've got people that come up every year religiously. So we've got the visitors up. We just got to get the visitor spend up. And that's something that we try to encourage. And things like the Ecotourism Award will get people to spend some dollars in the Midcoast.
Yeah. And some of that's on local businesses too, isn't it? You know, to promote themselves, to make sure that they've got opportunities for people who are here to spend money with them.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you look at council's role, our role, we do have a little bit of an economic development function, but it's not council's role. So if you ask the community, where do you want to spend your rating dollar? They're not going to really say spend all your rating dollar on economic development. They'll go spend it on your assets. So spend it on your buildings, spend it on your parks, spend it on your roads. Make sure our water's, you know, crispy, clear and tasty and delicious. They're the types of things that the community want to us to spend our money on. We do have an ED role, but we're not the main driver for it. So our plans and policies assist.
Yeah.
And our mayor's strong on getting, you know, businesses together and collaborate and sort of drive that tourism spend.
Yeah. And we were talking again off air about the roles of the local chambers of commerce, and it's nice to see them kind of collaborating and getting in on that space a little bit too.
Yeah, and you know, we our industry in the Midcoast is very diverse, and people don't appreciate the extent of it. You know, I was at a the other week. I went to a plastic recycling plant in north of Taree. I think it's called Renew, and they're renewing soft plastics. And like people thought you couldn't do that. Well, we're doing it in the Midcoast. Or the big, at the cricket or the tennis, you've got those big soakers for the cricket and the tennis courts. That's in the Midcoast. Like, there's things that we do here that you wouldn't think of that actually we do. You know, we've got the steamer manufacturing, we've got the boat industry, we've got some big things here, and outside of tourism.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the Super Sopper guy. I was chatting to him a few weeks ago, and like you said, I was blown away to know that they're probably the biggest supplier of those things in the world. He said India, no surprise there, is their biggest market. Cricket's such a religion over there. Yeah. And here they are, tucked away, just quietly, not making a big deal about themselves, just going about their business and leading the world in that industry. They've found their niche, and they've got some other cool products too.
Yeah, and they're not asking the council for help, handout. They're going about their business. They're just doing it. So, like, for us, it's exciting to understand that type of business and how other industry can leverage off that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fabulous to hear those stories. Okay, so then for those people who are coming up for a visit, we want them to stay a bit longer, spend a little bit more. In your time here, have you found any, like, little hidden gems? I know this is like asking you who's your favourite child, but have you found any little hidden gems that you think, oh, people really need to know about this?
It's funny.
Or what's your favourite?
Well, so my background, I'm Southern. I'm Australian through and through, right? Yeah. But we have a name like Panuccio does come with some heritage. So Southern Italian, so Calabria or Calabresi. So comes with a particular cuisine.
Yeah.
And I've been brought up with like just Southern Italian. Good pasta, awesome schnitzels, meatballs with ricotta in it, delicious. So Bella Bellissimo is in Foster. Frank's, yeah. That's a Southern Italian cuisine. There was one, I think it was my second or third year here, I dropped off a frozen lasagna on Christmas Eve. Say, enjoy, like their lasagna is really nice. I probably can't. I was going to say, I can't make lasagna. No, I can't make lasagna. My mum can make lasagna.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So then every time I go down, it's not every time, more than enough. When I go visit mum, I'll come home with, like, you know, a ton of food.
Yeah.
So I gave Frank one of our frozen lasagnas. Go, here you go. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
They had it on Boxing Day, and it's like, it's the same type. It pretty much tastes exactly the same as here. So I used to just go down there every so often for feel like lasagna. Go to Frank's. But what I do like to do, and I like to go to Frank's, that's fine. There's other restaurants as well. Like, there's a ton of them here, which is awesome.
Mm.
But on a Sunday lunch at the Recce, tough to beat. You know, good bistro,
yeah.
But great spot. You could just sit back for about 2 hours and just relax.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a few places which is pretty good. There's no shortage.
There's not, is there? We're so spoiled here. So there are a couple of things that we probably should cover off. Now, beautiful area. People love to holiday here. People love to move here as well, though. Housing affordability, it's not just our region. It's everywhere. It's an issue. How do we deal with that? How do we resolve that?
Yeah. It's all levels of government.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's obviously not just the council responsibility. There's only so much we can do. What council can control, council can control its planning control. So local environmental plan, mm-hmm. So what you can build in a permissible sense on your block of land,
yeah.
Or what type of businesses you could run in your commercial areas, or what type of industries you could run in your industrial areas. We've just gone through a process that's pretty much taken about 6 years to combine the former council's local environmental plans into one. And there's a lot of new uses there that would help and encourage different types of uses on land, which that's the principal way that we can help.
Mm.
The other way we could also help, and we have been trying to get better at, is our approval times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yep.
Our DA stats as far as approval times aren't too bad. We did a thing we engaged a consultant to look at, I suppose, the challenges we face in approving or considering applications. And a document called Housing Barriers came out and had a whole heap of recommendations, which we report to the council. Pretty sure it's quarterly,
mm-hmm.
And we're working through it. Good news for the community. Community didn't pay for it. Didn't come out of the rating dollar. We leveraged the grant that came from the state to improve how we go about our DA assessment. What we discovered and what we did discover at the time was, whilst we're quite okay on our DA assessment times, and their numbers are all, we report them publicly, and the state published them as well. There's like a leagues table, they call it, on DA assessments. So it's outing the ones that don't go so well,
mm-hmm.
But we're part of that. We go okay there. But where we struggle is more, not the DA assessment, it's more the post-approval. So you get your approval and there'll be some sort of requirements after approval that you need to satisfy the council on.
Yeah.
Sometimes they could take longer than they ought to take, and that's what we're trying to get better at. So it identified areas that we need to improve, and we are getting better at it.
Yeah.
But we're not alone. So we do know councils all up the coast, like outside of Metro, hard to get a development engineer, for instance. Very difficult. So, and that's where we're sort of struggling, those type of post-approvals.
Mm. So there's skill shortages that feed into that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So we try to develop within as much as we can. So before I started, my first year or two, we were about 1% of staff, was under 1%. Well, apprentices, trainees, graduates and the like, we're a bit over 5 now. Okay. So we're trying to get a bit better of developing within.
Yeah.
If you go much higher, you have to provide more resource to support. Right. So it becomes a bit of, it's hard to get the right number.
Mm.
1% wasn't the right number.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that from the get-go. So we've increased that, and we had a bit of a focus on it, which is good.
Yeah.
It's also retaining some good staff as well.
Mm.
So retaining staff is always an issue.
Yeah.
We struggled during COVID because, you know, there's a lot of COVID dollars going around infrastructure-wise. So, you know, it was attractive for a staff member to leave and go to a state government agency, get paid a ton load more.
Yeah.
Probably less accountability, I suppose, is one way of putting it, because we all live and work in the mid-coast. So every time we go to work, we're accountable because we live here.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm working for someone, the office is based in Parramatta, you're a bit more removed from it.
Yeah.
In my view. So, yeah, like councils across the state lost staff during COVID for that, and they're coming back anyway now. So helpful.
Yeah. And so was that more, do you reckon, a regional council issue? So people kind of looking for roles in cities, wanting to move to where they feel like the action is?
Well, a lot of it, you could work from home. So, you know,
okay.
I think it was planning, Department of Planning, like based in Parramatta, but you don't have to go in once every three weeks.
Right.
So you're working from home. You can work from anywhere. So you get the benefit of still living in the Mid-Coastal GA, but, you know, you're getting paid from Parramatta.
Yeah, right. So we've effectively lost some of our skill base, but we haven't, you know, going back to housing again, freed up space for somebody else to come in.
Yeah, the space isn't too bad. So as far as space, as far as land to develop.
Well, so in terms of the housing that's already here, so somebody's taken their skills to the city, but they're still taking up a house. So we can't bring in somebody from elsewhere to fill that role. That makes it really challenging.
Yeah, it does a little bit, but, you know, we've got internal strategies to encourage. And, you know, we're in a different economic environment at the moment, and we are filling some of those gaps.
Yeah.
But right. It was much more difficult during COVID.
Mm. So does private enterprise have a role to play as well? Because you've mentioned, you know, all levels of government have their role to play in dealing with housing. Does private enterprise have a role there as well?
Yeah, a little bit. So for the Mid-Coast, there's a whole heap of land that might be privately owned that isn't developed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you release a whole heap of land,
yeah,
logic will tell you that prices may or may not come down, but they're not really going to go up if you're flooded with stock.
Yeah.
But, you know, government can't control the release of those types of lands at all. So I suppose private enterprise can play a role there. Government, not at a local level, more of at a state and federal level, can try to assist private enterprise in releasing land. And it might be provide some infrastructure or whatnot to sort of stimulate it.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. And that sort of happened in victories on the Manning, where the federal government provided a grant for public infrastructure, but that got the development started, and that will result in, you know, quite a few homes there on the river.
Yeah, okay. On that issue of private enterprise, what can you tell us about what's happening with Tuncurry Plaza? Because it's so good to see that being developed.
All I know is privately owned, great that it's been developed. That's all I know. Like, council didn't buy it.
We thought we were going to get the inside scoop on who was coming in there.
No.
It'll be really nice to see that. I think it's going to add, you know, a level of vibrance to that street. It's going to bring people back into, you know, Main Street Tuncurry, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Main Street Tuncurry was not, it was just quiet on that part of town because nothing was in that complex really.
Mm.
And it'll be good to see it open and vibrant again. And they're spending some money on it, you could see it. So.
And you can see the progress that's happening. And that, you know, on top of the new pool house, which is opened at the Bellevue, it's kind of exciting to see Tuncurry having a bit of a resurgence.
Yeah, why not? You know, you're still close to water.
Totally.
And it's lovely. And yeah, went to the Bellevue a couple of weeks ago and new kitchen or new restaurant, new fit out. It's really good. Really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah. What about everybody's favourite topic of the bridge? What's your take on that? Do we need another bridge?
The asset only has a certain amount of years, so 100%. That's the timing of that. So the government does know it's time limited, so there will be a replacement bridge at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a duplication, which it probably will be, because you'll still... There'll probably will be duplications, don't know when.
Yeah.
But yeah, our issue is it's not council owned infrastructure, that's state owned infrastructure. It certainly needs to be replaced, it's just a matter of timing.
Yeah. Yeah, and resources, I guess, too. Like that's a big job.
Yeah, and for Tuncurry, it's an iconic site. So you can't just replace it with any old bridge, right?
100%. That's our bridge, our wonky bridge. We love it.
It's just our iconic bridge. So you've got to replace it with something special or duplicate it with pretty much the like.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the challenge with it. So no doubt it needs to be duplicated at some stage, give access in and out. The challenge is either side of the bridge will be the challenge though. So as you're coming into it, going across it, traffic's still going to funnel.
Mm-hmm.
So mitigating those issues is going to be a concern. We had a study a couple of years, or we asked Transport for New South Wales to commission a study from, I suppose, Tuncurry TAFE towards the bridge to try to manage traffic flows across that area to make it better.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I go in the opposite direction in the morning, but you can see it build up heading into Foster.
Yeah, but it's only at certain times, isn't it? Most
it's only at certain times. Yeah. And it's only not going to underplay it, but it's only probably for about 10 minutes at certain times.
Yeah, that's right. And like I used to come up here in the kind of mid-90s and when the triathlon was here and raced the Ironman a few times. And so, you know, to me personally, there's something special about that bridge because we used to run over that bridge and, you know, even doing it now, it just kind of brings back memories. So it's iconic, but it's special.
Yeah, so it's not about...
to us. So you can't... You're right. Whatever happens there has to be done.
That's properly. Right. So take it for granted. The bridge has to be replaced. So people will say, what's going to happen to the bridge? Well, it probably has to be replaced or duplicated. But as long as I think your advocacy is going to be at a point where make it iconic and something that we're proud of.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Looking ahead... Tell us, what's your vision for the Mid-Coast?
This is going to sound pretty boring. So, asset management, for us is sort of allocating resources to, I suppose, the condition of an asset that the community is satisfied with. Now, I know how that sounds, but, that's the reality of it for us because that's the challenge.
Yeah.
So if we could get enough resource to maintain our assets, our roads at a satisfactory standard,
mm-hmm.
that's where we sort of headed, and that's the planning that we have been doing. We recently did an asset and condition survey of our residents, and satisfactory would be a standard that is achievable, but we're still going to fall short on dollars.
Yeah.
But that's a satisfactory road in a regional council is not too bad. So that's sort of our challenge. And if you put it in perspective, my former council at North Sydney, they were, they're 11 square kilometres, we're 10,000 square kilometres. Their road network is 150 kilometres, we're 3,600, right? So then when you talk about your rate base, we're 90-odd, they're 60-odd mil. So if you look at how much rating dollar goes to an asset, we fall well short. We've got around 150 over 3,600 is about 5%.
Yeah.
So our road network is much greater.
Yeah.
As far as a regional council, Maitland's probably the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
They've got 700 kilometres of road, $85 million of rating income, and their LGAs, local government area, is 400 square kilometres. That's probably that's more a sustainable model. For us, that's our biggest challenge, but we're working towards it. We did a financial sustainability review. Again, that's a good read. We reported it publicly, so you find it on our website. We did a road study or road strategy for the Mid-Coast. So whilst we don't have enough money to maintain our roads as it is where people will be satisfied with, there's things that we could do to make it better and we're working towards that. We know that financial sustainability is an issue. There's a state inquiry, which I gave evidence at, and there's a federal inquiry, which I'll put a submission to, and they know funding for local government falls short. For instance, in 1995, 1% of federal tax revenue went to councils.
1%. Right, for everything that councils need to do.
Yeah, so that was just for discretionary funding. So the difference between discretionary and sort of project-based funding is if you just gave councils 1% of federal tax revenue, we could choose to build a library or fix a road, or we get that option.
Yeah.
It's under 1%. It's under 0.5% at the moment. So from 95 to now, it's dramatically fallen. What the politicians will say is, it's 0.5%, but we've got all these other grant opportunities that you could apply for. One, they're competitive. Two, it's tied grants. So it would be a grandstand or would be a tiny bit of road.
Yeah.
We don't have the discretion of where we spend it. So we've been on a fair bit of advocacy on that point at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
ALGA, which is a federal, the Australian Local Government Association, they've been advocating to the feds and the state body, local government, New South Wales, have been doing similar type of advocacy. I do think out of the state inquiry into local government sustainability, there will be some changes. There'll be probably changes to how we're able to rate, charge land rates to residents and give a little bit more flexibility because at the moment the rate peg, which is the amount that you can increase your rates, is always less than CPI.
Right.
And it's generally always less than the state local government award, which is mandatory that I have to apply to staff. So every year we're trying to squeeze more out of the rating dollar with less available. So what does the future look like? The future, I'm excited about getting our asset management plans in a state where we're delivering our roads and our assets in a satisfactory condition.
So what roads are obviously a big one. What are the other assets, though, that you think are...
Water. Water, massive. Like, you know, our waters is the best in the state. Our water's brilliant. But we're going to have to deliver Peg Leg Creek Dam in our 30-year plan, but we'll be looking to do that within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be like a $200 million project. Water security is an issue for the mid-case. At the moment, we're okay. So mm-hmm. the drought of the 2019 period, just around the times we had the fires,
mm-hmm.
We ended up drilling more bores at Nabiak, and that got us through a period,
right,
which was fine. We carted water to some of our southern towns for about a month, which wasn't ideal, but we had to. We had no choice. So water security is an issue. So Nabiak will sustain us for a while,
okay,
but as more people move in, you've got a future plan. So, yeah, water security is an issue. So we've got water, buildings, parks, reserves. Like, there's a ton. We've got a $5 billion asset base. It's, mm-hmm. it's substantial.
And there's other assets, though, as well, aren't there? I mean, you and I are sitting here in the podcast studio, which is provided by council,
yeah,
in the library, which is also provided by council, which is a fabulous resource. And I don't know how many people have kind of been and checked out the library or used the meeting rooms here, but some of the assets are exciting. I mean, water's obviously exciting because we need it to be alive.
That's right.
But there's things like this building that the council's delivered as well.
Yeah, we've got our library. This is the best in state, and I could confidently say it because it's probably the most recent library opened in the state.
Mm.
So when you build something new, it's generally best in state. This is the best in state. Like Yallawanya Gunya, our council chambers in Taree. Pretty much, I've seen other new council chambers, but pretty much best in state there as well. But we got the MEC. You know, we've got an art gallery. We've got facilities that people don't realise they're council facilities, and we need to maintain them, so that's part of our asset portfolio.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. So for those who aren't really sure what assets are available in the area, where should they go to have a look for them?
Oh, you could jump onto our website. There's plenty of information about what's available in the Mid-Coast.
Yeah. So for those of you who are listening, I would encourage you to do that. Check out the council's website if you haven't already. You might actually be surprised at what's available here for us.
Probably what I would also encourage listeners to do is to jump on. It's called NewsWrap. So every Friday afternoon, you'll get all of our media releases for the week. And, you know, it might be what's happening at the Manning Entertainment Centre. You know, we had Joe Avati there a couple of weeks ago. Hilarious. Like, really talented people in Taree performing at our entertainment centre. We get the Archibald is toured at our art gallery in Taree. Mm. We have some pretty cool cultural events that people just wouldn't ordinarily know of. So if you just get NewsWrap, you'll get our weekly news, but we'll have what's on as well, and you'll see what's floating around in the Mid-Coast.
Yeah, terrific. So we've covered off a bit today. Thanks, Adrian.
No worries.
To wrap up, tell us, how would you describe yourself? How would you describe yourself? Give us three words that would describe you.
Oh, no, I'm pretty calm. I'm calm because I was a practicing lawyer for a long time and I knew what was urgent, and what's urgent is a deadline provided by a judge. That's urgent.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty calm. I'm honest, which is good. It's easier to be honest than otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably gritty. Is probably a good word, because like if I'm golfing or tennising, I'll chase down that ball that no one else will chase.
Yeah.
If I'm golfing, I'll scratch around and try to achieve an outcome. So yeah, that comes with determination. So I'll get things done.
Yeah, terrific. And it's clear from our chat here, and also as I said off air, you know, your passion for the area that you call home now. But if you were talking to our listeners, and you could give them one parting piece of advice about how they can make a positive impact on our area, what would that be?
Well, get involved. So sort of one piece of advice, but it all relates.
Mm-hmm.
So understand as far as what the council does, you could just jump on our website and you can know what the business we transact. We'll don't read the council papers by any means, but we have a nice summary. So you know what we do. But you could get involved by volunteering, for instance. We have about 1,600 volunteers in the Mid-Coast, which sounds crazy.
Yeah.
It's more than what we have at staff. But volunteering is great because you get to contribute, you'll add value, and you'll get to understand what we do. So you get involved that way.
Yeah, that's great advice. So for all of you guys listening out there, get involved. We've got a terrific community. We live in a beautiful part of the world. And there is something that each of us can do, and that is to, yeah, volunteer for a local organisation, for a group that you're passionate about, do something. Adrian Panuccio, General Manager, Midcoast Council, thank you so much for joining us on Convos.
Awesome, thanks.
Guys, thanks for tuning in again to this episode. I'll make sure that links to Council's social media and also to their website are in the show notes, and we'll look forward to seeing you all in the next episode of Convos.
You've been listening to Convos, the Lifestyle Barrington Coast podcast. If you love this chat, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. And if you know somebody we should be talking to on Convos, hit us up on our Facebook page, Lifestyle Barrington Coast.